Rehabilitation Center.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
This morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Friday, the 13th of August, 2021, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. On the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. Today's show is brought to you by the Department of Inland Revenue. And it's Friday. That means today is Culture Fridays. And my guest today is returning from earlier in the week, Mr. Chris Omo Shango Davis, returns to tell us more about the origins of Junkanoo and the city of Pokasu, a new black Mecca. But before we get into that portion of the show, and we're not going to take long, this part two is filled with even more information than the first half of the discussion. I just got a little bit of housekeeping to do. I want to say good morning to Blue Swift AP1758. Good morning. That's a little speedy car you have. It's very nice. I liked it. I didn't see it for very long as it sped across the pedestrian crossing with the pedestrian on it. But what I liked about it most was that sticker in the back window that said, baby in car. I like it when people give you clear indications of the behavior that you need to exercise while around them. And here's what I mean. Not necessarily that I need to be careful because there's a baby in the car, but I need to be careful because you don't care that you have a baby in the car. I'd like to say good morning to that vehicle, MV3739, who was prancing his commercial vehicle down Shirley Street like a six. For you older people, that's like a fancy performance motorbike that bad man used to perform acrobatics on. Yeah, good morning to you too. I hope that it was truly a waste emergency. Can't imagine where you were speeding to this morning. But it seems as if when you hit those police officers on Bay Street in front of the Point and at the Nassau Street intersection, you moderated your behavior in an awesome way. And I just want to point that out to the police. Do you see how it happens? Like, your mere presence causes people to moderate their behavior. You can't change them, their heart, their spirit. You can't turn them into good people, per se, but your mere presence causes people to moderate their behavior. But people have to trust that you will act when you see traffic offenses. I want to say good morning to that police officer who was on mobile patrol in their mind last week at the Shirley Street and Mackey Street intersection. The least you could do, officer, is blow your horn when you see someone committing a traffic offense you have no intention of attending to. Now, I know the police force is stressed out. I know y'all been on go slow for at least 30 years. Hear me, Bahamian public. The Royal Bahamas Police Force has been on go slow for at least 30 years. How do I know? Because they have been publicly and actively protesting industrial issues in the force for over 30 years. And I don't think we have seen any public acknowledgement of resolution in those matters. So it leads me to believe that is one of two things. Either these guys are on go slow, or the force is no longer able to inculcate into its own officers what their actual obligations, responsibilities, and mandates are. That the force itself has allowed a degradation within it that renders it unable to perform its function. Now, I too have to practice moderation. And I try to moderate my critique of waking people. I try to focus on the systems that should be functioning, that are needed, that are necessity for those working people to perform the function they're being paid to perform. And in most instances, we find that the problem is not a massive group of people who don't care anymore. It is a dereliction in a system that is so grand, that the dereliction and the breakdown is so huge that people cannot care. They cannot care more than the people who are responsible for those very systems. Now, I know somebody could text in and say, man, Aaron, as long as I know you, you ain't had no job, so you can't talk about these labor issues either. But I can be honest with you, I thank the Lord that I have been able to navigate this planet in this place without having to entrench myself into formal employment, because it's like a plantation out there. It's like y'all really into enslaving people. I went to a fast food restaurant trying to get some breakfast this morning. I was a little late coming in. So I knew my timeline was limited. So I knew that there's a great chance that this particular fast food restaurant wasn't going to be able to give me the food in the time that I needed it, despite the fact that they advertised themselves as a fast food restaurant. And you know what it is? Let me tell you what it is. And some of y'all know what place I'm talking about. You know what it is? The people in there, they're not surly, they're not despondent, they're not angry, they're not bad customer service-ish because they don't have any training or they don't have any manners or brought up to your common sense. I get the sense that they perform that way because the management doesn't care about them and what they need to make money for the company. And at some point, the breakdown in the system that you expected to operate gets so big that there's nothing that you could do, except if the people gonna keep paying me to come here and pretend like I wake in, well, I gonna come and keep taking the paycheck until I could find something better. But I can be honest, I went into a restaurant, a fast food restaurant, and the person on the line in front of me sneezed twice. And nobody who worked there thought it necessary to get some sanitizing resources together to sanitize the space. In fact, they all look at me, except for Secu. They all look at me as if I was crazy to suggest that somebody here should be doing that. And I told them, I'm prepared to do it if you give me the supplies. And the look they gave me then made me realize that maybe they don't have the supplies. You know what I'm saying? Maybe they don't. Maybe they're told they can't access it. Maybe they want to spray down the space too for their own safety, but they can't because they don't have the resources necessary. There's a lot of people out here running businesses, making money off of the hard work and the not so hard work of Bahamian labor and employees, right? But refuse to give them the resources necessary to do the job properly, to do the job without stressing themselves to pieces. It's a little plantation, man. And not because of the government, because there's nothing the government could do to stop you from treating someone decently. Nothing. That's on you. That's on me. That's an individual responsibility. Anyway, I'm going to leave it right there for the morning. There's a lot more to talk about, you know. There's a lot more. You got to get into today's papers. Please pick up the Guardian. And look at this story. On the second half of the fold, it says, minister's driver, personal assistant, receive honorariums. Well, today is Culture Friday, so we can't get into the public service culture today. I'm going to bring somebody on to talk about this. But I'm going to ask you all this one question before I go. Do you think the state is serious about fixing the public health care system? Do you? Arlington, I'm going to read these texts. If a call pops up, let's take that call, and then we can go to a break, okay? Awesome. Good morning. First text, morning, Miss Green. Were you able to give Pumpkin Eater my contact, or do you have his? Still need to speak with him? Pumpkin Eater, call the producer. Get him your contact, please. I got a number for you. Another text, baby on board sign was probably for the driver to let us all know that he drives like a baby. That is awesome, texter. Thank you. Thank you. But I can be honest with you, right? Like, you, the driver with a baby on board may tend to panic. And so it's good to know. Another text, great show as usual. No way in this world some of these police in Nassau pass a physical exam to be a police officer. It's scientifically impossible they pass that as bad as they shape. Another text, the food stores are raising their prices on food, so we will no longer be able to eat tuna and grits. We now have to have two options, eat the tuna or the grits. Can't afford both. This is ridiculous. Since we're talking about fast food because of this pandemic, how come pizza places making the pizza with their bare hand? I went to a pizza place yesterday. When I see them making the pizza, I wanted to throw up. I think they should be using gloves. That you don't have to think that. That's in the rules. That's in the laws. They're supposed to be using gloves. Now, what you could do, you got a couple options. You could pull the management aside and you could tell management, look here, I saw that. I don't have it documented. But if I come in again and I don't see gloves, I'm going to expose you, not just to the authorities, but to the media. You can go to corporate. You tell them the same thing. Or you go directly to the media. Or you go to the authorities and report them. Go to Ministry of Health. Go to the office on Meeting Street and then ask them where to go from there. It's the best thing to do. Thank you, texters. Arlington, let's go to that break. And when we come back, we are going to be talking to Mr. Chris Omoshango Davis about the origins of Junkanoo. We'll be right back, so stay tuned to 96.9 FM.
I've been representing all my life. I'm getting ready to make it count this time. Since it's 2021 for your family line, you better get ready. It's about that time. So tell mama to be ready. Tell it to the whole family. The one, the two, four, two. The count depends on you. So tell Teddy, go tell below. Mark it down on your calendar. Since it's 2021, this one's for everyone.
Like what you're hearing on the show? Want to support the conversation? Sponsor On the Clock today. Call Janet Lees at 302-2304. That's 302-2304. Be the solution. Sponsor On the Clock of Erin Green, where she dissects, we discuss, and you decide.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good morning and welcome back to On the Clock with Erin Green on 96.9 FM. I have a message for you from the Department of Inland Revenue. Save on your real property tax. Bahamian property owners can now take advantage of waivers on their real property tax in one of two ways. Bring your account to zero or get a payment plan. This offer ends August 31st, 2021. For further information, email rptforgive@bahamas.gov.bs or call 242-225-5000. 5778. That's a toll-free number. Again, this message is brought to you by the Department of Inland Revenue. I also want to send out a reminder. I think we're still in the midst of the school supply VAT holiday. So please, please, please take advantage of the savings wherever they are. I have another. Let's get to the caller. Caller, you get 30 seconds. Good morning.
Come on, man. You know your boy can't do it in 30 seconds.
Man, listen, I get Chris Davis. And
wait, let me tell you something. You will like this one.
Okay.
First of all, let me admonish. This is the weekend.
Yes.
This is Friday, the 30th day. It's called from the old people time, bad luck day. Don't walk underneath no ladder. If you see a black cat cross the road, turn around, go back. Don't point your finger at no graveyard. They go, rock, no. Remember them old saying?
Yes, yes.
But let me tell you something. This is a warning to my Bahamian people. You know we just put all them brand new Nike tailors and things and dress up with our nice stocks, jeans, and go party.
Yes.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, right up the fish fry, Polisky, and wherever we can find one party. Even if we got a crash one and go to one that we invited to.
Yep.
Now, let me tell you something. The people in the mountains say they go on strike because they tired. The nurses and the doctors say they on their knees. They tired. They can't even go up to the family. They can't rest. They take it risks every day of their lives. The hospital full. Intensive care full. No more ventilator. If you go out and you party this weekend, guess what? Your two bestest friends ain't there. Mr. Ventilator ain't there. And the doctor ain't going to be there. Ain't no room for you. That's that. Okay, I'll finish with that. Stay home this weekend, everybody. You don't need to party.
Thank you.
Stay, hug up your family. Now, the last thing I can tell you, Ms. Green.
Yeah.
I got a guava tree I planted in my yard. Guess how the guava tree grows? The guava tree goes from my yard over the fence and I go over the neighbor yard.
Yeah, because you planted, but your neighbor pray for it.
Hold on. No. See, it was growing up between two trees, and you know trees look for sunlight.
Yeah.
So they bend that way towards looking for sunlight and edible over that. The root, the trunk on my side, and the guava was over that side.
Oh,
I had to beg my neighbors to open up a gate so I could go over there and get done.
Boy, look how community is working.
But let me tell you something. My neighbors have let the guava drop all over the ground, and the worms eat them up. So the day they go out and leave the gate open.
Yeah.
If you had one. On Facebook or on WhatsApp, I got to show you. I get one big bag of the biggest American with very little seeds, plenty meat inside.
Post it on my wall, Sparky, or hey, send a message, and then I come in for them.
Hey, you come in for what?
I come in. Look here, me, you, and somebody who's made guava duff need to talk.
That's about 4 guava duff you can make on a day.
That's awesome.
That's how much I get this morning.
Thank you, Sparky. Thank you, Sparky. But look here, you always make some good points, you know. They're Bahamians, especially people who don't want to get vaccinated, right? Because what vaccination does is it reduces your personal chance, right, of getting severely ill or dying. It reduces that chance of you when you get vaccinated. So even if you get vaccinated, right, if you can stay home, stay home. If you have a safe, comfortable space to be in, plan to be in it. Start shifting your culture. Look here. If you got a house with plenty rooms, talk to your family about sharing space. Not everybody have to go out when they mad at each other. If you can stay home, please stay home. One last call. Caller, you're on the clock. When I say that, callers to my audience, if you got calls for and questions for Mr. Davis, things to share about Junkanoo and Pan-African culture, that is awesome. I really want to get into this segment. Caller, you're on the clock.
Well, Miss, hello.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Aaron.
How you do?
Boy, anyway, I would give that respect to you by not changing your paradigm shift of your conversation, but you have a blessed weekend.
Yeah, man. Thank you.
I wouldn't do that.
All right. Thank you. Two more texts. You can't make pizza in gloves. Well, then we get shut down the whole pizza industry in the Bahamas, eh? Simple. I mean, it's simple. You can't make pizza in gloves? Well, then shut it down. You can't pass the people the box and gloves? Shut it down. You don't want pay to replace the gloves every time you change a station? Well, then shut it down. That's all we could do. Another text, no, they can't be serious. Many deserving persons remained unpaid in the recent honorariums. Many frontliners who worked during this period remain unpaid. No, I don't think they're serious at all, texter. Let me say good morning to my guest. Mr. Davis, you still there? Good morning, Mr. Davis. You still on the Zoom?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
All right.
How you do?
I'm good.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, excited to get going.
Absolutely. And so I wanted us to continue talking about the origin of Junk Canoe and Jian Kwa.
Right.
The city of Pokasu and why it is the new black Mecca. I wanted to ask, how was your desire to reconnect received by your Ghanaian hosts?
Oh, it was received wonderfully well. There were even times when people were shedding tears, including myself, you know, because we were so moved by this connection that had been lost, you know, and particularly the people of Pokasu and all over Ghana, actually. They, even the ones that had knowledge of Jian Kwa, most didn't. And you had people from these same groups that were closely connected to these groups who never knew about that aspect of history. And especially when me and we were able to bring it to the forefront that, you know, it goes against the narrative and it goes a long way towards us healing these wounds between the African diaspora, because it goes against the narrative of the African chief that participated in the transatlantic slave trade, a narrative that is both overplayed and in most cases straight up lie. Yeah.
Wow. So, Mr. Chris Davis, interpreter at the Pompeii Museum?
Right, that's my day job. But remember, I also have Sankofa Flamingo.
Right.
And that's where I do the bulk of the research that we're speaking about now. And it's also the title of my upcoming book and also the name of all of my social media tags, Facebook, Instagram, and others soon to follow.
Now, what does it mean when you say you're an interpreter?
Well, I could use one of my personal favorites. There was a recent article in the Bahamas Historical Society talking about, quote unquote, black slave owners and slave owners of color,
mm-hmm.
right? And oftentimes when you get into the depths of speaking about slavery, people often love to bring that up. Not quite dissimilar to how when you speak about Black Lives Matter, and people want to bring up this myth of black on black crime, right? So when you look at it like that, you could see the parallels, okay? So essentially, sorry, I had a little distraction because I hear in the museum too, yeah, right. Sorry, so essentially when this all comes together, one could see how it's all interconnected between the Bahamas, Pokasu and Princesstown, and the like. And furthermore, when you look at these parallels that are made, is the whole Jian Kwa story, as I reiterate, goes against the narrative that we in the Bahamas have been spoon-fed, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so, excuse me, I'm in a COVID cough now. And so essentially, with all the research that I was doing and all the traveling that I was doing, I was able to reconnect with some very powerful people as well, who again were surprised at this reconnection that we were able to do through the World Junk Canoe Festival Foundation, and of course through my research as well. Okay?
Absolutely.
So I had a distraction when you asked that last question. Could you repeat that last question again? Because, yeah.
No, man, you don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. Let's move on in the conversation.
Right, yeah, I had a little distraction.
Yeah, no,
someone
no. Don't worry.
By the door trying to get my attention, and yeah, that kind of threw me off a bit.
Now
yeah.
Tell me, why is Pokasu or Princesstown the new black Mecca?
Okay, essentially this is the place and the homestead of the man that we were taught was named John Canoe. Real name Jian Kwa.
Right.
Okay, so and this is where the proof is that, first of all, he was never a slave, as we were first led to believe, mm-hmm. a slave that brought this parade over to the Bahamas And secondly, he was never even a slave trader. He was a hero and a warrior as described by the chief, the elder council, and the majority of people who still live there in Parker Sioux. And John Kwau is their major historical figure in that region. Okay, and so of course we know that John Kwau does not belong to the Bahamas alone. Mm-hmm. The first recorded incidences of John Kwau in the Western Hemisphere actually occurred in Jamaica, in and about and around the Maroon societies, which are also closely linked to the people who served under and were around John Kwau. So this is not even just for Bahamians, this is actually for the entire diaspora, especially when you realize that most of the early people that were taken from Africa by the British and the Dutch were actually Akan people, many of whom came from the western region of present-day Ghana. All right? Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it's not only linked to masqueraders and parades, it's also linked to the revolutionary heroes of these various nations in the West. And so Jamaica, Queen Nani and Captain Cujo, Guyana of Kofi, Antigua of Kwaku, all of these are extremely common names in Ghana. And then I wondered to myself, well, how is it that we have the biggest commemoration to John Kwau in the world, yet we don't have this Akan revolutionary representation? And so we found that Akan revolutionary representation through a man by the name of Kwame Nah. He was actually a footnote that was discovered initially by Michael Creighton and Dr. Gail Saunders. But in a mistranslation, he was named Quarino. But his actual name was Kwame Nah. And that's another very common name even today in Ghana. And Kwame Nah's plan was to kill Governor Fitzwilliam first. This was in 1734. And then following by killing all the other white colonizers. And now the end results of his plan is what's sketchy. However, like Kwaku, in my opinion, his plan would have been like Kwaku to make the Bahamas a colony of the Ashanti Empire all the way over there in Ghana, present-day Ghana, which is unprecedented and absolutely amazing in the context of speaking about the Maafa or the Black Holocaust or whatever terminology you choose to use. And ironically, Kwame Nah arrived on a slave ship that was owned by a man who has one of the most prominent statues in this country, and that man was Woodes Rogers. Mm-hmm. And he had a ship, again, ironically named the Nassau. That was the name of his ship. And he was the one that brought in Kwame Nah from present-day Southwest Gold Coast. Mm-hmm. And that ship landed here in 1730. And in 1734, after having lived as a, what they call Bush Negro, but it's a derogatory term. I prefer to use the term petite maroon, mm-hmm. or just a maroon. And he seemingly became a maroon and survived for all these years, most likely in the interior of the Bahamas, which was the maroon stronghold. But I ain't gonna get into that.
Now, one of my you say interior of the Bahamas, you mean New Providence?
Sorry, New Providence. Okay. They're doing them. That's the apologies for my Nassau-centric mentality.
Yeah. Now, let's finish off that point about Kwame Nah, and then I got two callers on the line.
Right. And so Kwame Nah, again, to reiterate, his plan was to kill the governor first. He had secretly recruited many other people, and that was how the plan came to fruition. So he was actually recognized by a soldier, and when they were capturing him, he actually killed one of the soldiers who were trying to capture him. But then he was then overwhelmed by all of the other people. Mm-hmm. Then eventually, you know, of course, under torture and duress, he confessed, and several others also confessed to having knowledge of this great plot to pretty much blow up the house of Governor Fitzwilliam. And it's a reminder that Government House was built shortly after this. This was the reason why they felt this need to build this house up on this hill that was kind of loosely fortified in order to protect against these plots like the one that Kwame Nah had hatched.
Wow.
They claim that they don't know what happened to him, but I will guarantee the 99% that that he was most likely executed, as was typical. And we have other Bahamian revolutionaries who were Maroons, who had planned to lead slave revolts, all of whom were executed as well. And so that's essentially who Kwame Nah was. And ironically now, of course, this is a stretch because it was such a common name. However, there may be a link to a man named Kwame Nah Apri. And Kwame Nah Apri was the main lieutenant of John Kwau himself.
Oh, wow. Okay. Let's stick a pin there. Let's get to this caller. Caller, you're on the clock. Good morning, caller. You still there? Arlington, let's get to the second caller. Caller, you're on the clock.
Good Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Now, the other new one is African, African nationalist, right? You in 1979. Where you been?
Me?
Yeah, 1979.
I was at Miss Hall, early learning center.
I think that was the year, the child, or something like that. Now, Eddie Hanna's wife brought in Robert Nesta Marley to perform at Dewey Sports Center.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that set off the dreadlocks in the Bahamas. Man, but they blamed the F&M and said, blame her? She started rapping the Bahamas. You have heard that?
Man. Yeah, I heard some foolishness like that.
Uh-huh.
But a moment could start Rasta in the Bahamas.
Yeah, she started when we really come on stage, she started a black nationalist, a black survival. Stand up for our rights. Man, he look off. He had the curious one line up.
That's beautiful.
That's something I would never forget. When she brought a white English lady who was so black nationalist. She traveled with the turn all day.
Yeah.
And she brought in Robert Nesta Marley. I think that's the only time he ever been here, but he lived there secretly.
Instead of calling her a white woman, call her a woman of European descent.
Yeah.
And then it makes more sense when you say it that way. But look here, I got another caller on the line, then we got to get back to these questions. Thank you so much for that. Caller, you're on the clock.
Yes, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm very much pleased to have your guest in studio. I love the way he's bridging the region and the history of the slavery, what happened after slavery.
Yes, sir.
And he's correct about coffee in Guyana and all that.
Yes, sir.
And I want to say that Pompey should be one of our national heroes.
Absolutely.
Right here in the Bahamas.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Chris.
Yeah.
So Kwamino and Kwaku, right? That's why Kwaku Street, right?
Well, no, Kwaku Street, because Kwaku was also a common name among the Igbo people of Nigeria. And that one is more closely connected to that. However, it shows you the interconnectedness, because the people of the Volta region in Ghana are very, very closely connected to the people of Togo, Benin, Yoruba land, and even stretching all the way to Igbo land. Yeah, so it just shows you the interconnectedness. But to my knowledge, Kwaku Street, mm-hmm. and the way that they spell that version is usually the one that comes from out of Nigeria, to my knowledge.
All right. You know, I'm going to take a moment to send a shout out to my two longtime neighbors, Shaka and Kwaku, right? And when we were growing up, you know, I know the names. They sound a little weird. But then now as an adult, you realize that the parents imbued them, right? The parents gave them this power from they was little boys. And you know, despite the fact that they may have been putting a little more rebellion in them, the parents were brave enough to give them that power.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Shaka Zulu, you know, that's the, he's considered the greatest king of the Zulu Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And like John Kwao, actually, he is literally like the South African counterpart of John Kwao, because it was the British and the Dutch that he was fighting against.
Yeah.
And his might, he was so mighty, actually, that they were even afraid to step to his kingdom and him. You know, so Shaka Zulu is definitely one of my favorite leaders in our history, despite how polarizing he could be at times.
Yeah. Wow. Awesome. So I want to ask you, I had a guest on who runs a chess club, and they focus on Awari, right? Which is original chess, African chess. Are there games that we play both in Ghana and in the Bahamas and the Caribbean today still, or traditionally earlier on that we would play? Are there any games, ring play? Board games made with little boards, board games, things like that?
Yeah, well, the games, most of the hand games that you see,
mm-hmm.
like the Tweenie Lee and all of these other hand games that we used to play,
yeah.
all of those are distinctly African and coming from different regions. And then, of course, you mentioned Wari, which is a game that's actually still played in the Bahamas and throughout the diaspora. I saw people in Ghana playing Wari, even though Wari is usually associated again with modern-day Nigeria. So again, it shows you that even though through the diversity, there's still that interconnectedness. right? Now, one of the interesting things, though, is the stories of Bukki and Barabi. And these come directly from the Akan folk tales, particularly, and also Aunt Nancy, will come from the trickster spider, Anansi, in Akan folklore, okay? So we are very closely connected. And as a matter of fact, if we knew about this history, I sure you heard of it's an old, extremely racist show that used to come on called Songs of the South, with Uncle Remus.
Yeah.
But he walking around, happy to be a slave, talking about zippity zoodah, zippity day, my oh my, what a wonderful day. And he is a slave on the plantation, right? Yeah. However, when bad time came and Uncle Remus told his stories, he told stories about this tricky rabbit, you understand, this tricky spider. And all of those stories, and remember now, Uncle Remus was from Georgia, and we're talking about also the Gullah and the Geechee people, okay? And so it's amazing that the Gullah and the Geechee, even though the etymology of those words are not directly associated with modern-day Ghana, however, the stories that they tell are distinctly Akan, particularly the story of Aunt Nancy, who, again, to reiterate, is a kind of disguising from the slave master of Anansi, the trickster spider, who also represents a deity in Akan folklore, okay? And so you could see how interconnected it is. And then also, like the story of John Canoe, you can see how Europeans and colonizers appropriate the story and turn stories and practices and customs and values that we held that benefited us and twist it around and kind of spoon-feed it back to us. And this happens in almost every facet of life. And there's always, after colonization and after people are completely conquered, there's always this moment of cultural, to reach into a zenith of cultural appropriation. Probably one of the best and most obvious examples of this would be the way that American imperialism works in the United States. Because now that you see that they've wiped out the vast majority of indigenous Americans, and they all live in concentration camps that they call reserves, you can see that they now name their weapons Tomahawk missile. They name their vehicles. So many things that symbolize Americanness now have indigenous American names. Cherokee Jeeps, Pontiac cars. Mm-hmm. All of these are names of leaders in different groups and ethnicities that they met there and played a crucial role in slaughtering, committing genocide against. And even when they had the Boston Tea Party, it's laughable, but they actually dressed up as indigenous Americans to prove their Americanness and separate themselves culturally from Great Britain. And so this may not seem to be connected to us, but it's very much interconnected and helps us understand how information works, how history works. Again, I remember what you said now about historical interpretation, and that's why it's so important. So one could easily say that 7% or 6%, is actually 6% of slave owners in the Bahamas were quote-unquote black, right? Mm-hmm. So first of all, you're using a 21st century label and mindset to talk about people living 200 years ago,
right,
when race and the racial gradation system was much, much different. Furthermore, the vast majority of the so-called black slave owners were actually the mulatto children of British, Scottish, Welsh loyalists. You understand what I'm saying? And if you would have gone to them, much like you have many people in the Bahamas to this day, when you could look at them and phenotypically you could see that they have some African in them, and they would look you plain in your face and say that they're white. Mm-hmm. And they would act white, and they are ontologically white. Mm-hmm. But they only class as white in the Bahamas. And you had the same thing back then, and it was probably even stronger back then, because to be black, of course, you were at risk of being a chattel slave. So you'll do anything not to be identified as such. And that's why historical interpretation is so important, because some read out the disingenuous statistic that 7% of slave owners in the Bahamas were black. You understand?
Yeah.
But then when you dig a little deeper, you find out that the majority of them, first of all, did not identify as black. And number two, the majority of them were loosely claimed and the illegitimate children of white men who had raped black women on their own plantation. Furthermore, what it doesn't take into account are the amount of quote-unquote mulattoes, as they were referred to, white parent, was generally white father, black mother. You understand? The majority of them remained enslaved. And so they try to put this on one end, but then on the other end, you had white people in the Bahamas who owned slaves that enslaved their own children and kept them perpetually down to the grandchildren and the great-grandchild. You understand? And so these are the harsh realities that we face and we live in.
So look here, I have a quick text here that says, so, and it's a question, so we agree with the one-drop rule, question mark?
Well, again, that's why I'm saying race is a social construct.
Mm-hmm.
The one-drop rule was not something that we adopted. It was something that was placed onto us. And then we, in an ingenious way, and through some of our great leaders like Marcus Garvey, Martin Delaney, and many, many others, too many to mention, we then turned that one-drop rule and used it for solidarity and mobilization.
Mm-hmm.
Furthermore, when you look at people like Dr. Kress, Francis Welsing, and several other people who deal with genealogy and these things like that, you know, they often claim that, you know, the African gene is usually dominant. And of course, even though race is a social construct, it is a social construct that has real implications on people's lives. And right. So generally speaking, we live in a world where you are at the bottom of a racial totem pole. And when we discuss what racism is actually a system that's designed on a totem pole with blacks at the bottom. And the closer you are to white, the generally speaking, the better
the greater your proximity to power.
Yeah, and we only need to look around in our own, on this island right here, in our own country, and you could see the distinct difference.
All right, Chris, let me make a point here about the difference between race and ancestry, right?
Right.
So we talk about ancestry, which is I am of African descent.
There you go.
Right? We could talk about race. I am identified as black.
Right.
Ancestry is immutable. It don't matter what you do in your life, you can't change who your ancestors were the DNA that brought you here.
Right.
But race is mutable. It's a construct that changes over geography, time, and culture even.
Exactly.
And so while race and ancestry are separate and different things, and race is a construct, like you say, it doesn't mean that it isn't real or that it doesn't have real effect on our lives.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Right. Yeah. You know, and you put it together perfectly. So essentially, you know, this one drop rule now in the Pan-African sense pretty much means any person of clear and obvious African descent.
Yeah.
You know, that's essentially what it is. And over time now, in a different time and space, it has shifted.
Mm-hmm.
Before, it was just all about maximizing profits, being able to exploit as many people as you can and their own dogmatic views on the construct of race. And many of these ideas come from the same people that we are conditioned to praise.
Absolutely.
The mother of social Darwinism and the father, well, we know who the father is, so Charles Darwin, but the mother is Queen Victoria. Queen Victoria is the mother of social Darwinism. And wow. They condition us to think that we should praise the same people that enslave us for freeing us.
Absolutely.
And then they,
I got some texts here for you.
Pardon me, sorry?
I said I have some texts here for you, but finish.
Yeah.
All right, you ready?
Yeah, ready.
The same person who asked if we have the one-drop rule, if we agree with the one-drop rule, has said, if one has a mixed parent and a white parent, they should say they're black or mixed or white, question mark. Well, race and ancestry are separate things, right?
Exactly. Yeah, right. Yeah, race and ancestry are different things. So in the reality of the world, in the world that we live in, through systematic white supremacy, which exists on a totem pole, if you are obviously of African descent, no matter how much, you are viewed as black in many circles. And mm-hmm. The American one-drop rule because it's two-sided. The American one-drop rule, America being the cultural giants, the ones that infuse their food culture, their music culture, and all these different things in people, a lot of it coming through African-American talents, of course, you know, rap music, actors, athletes, and the majority of whom are actually African-American, even though they represent less than 15% of the population. And so how you identify, in my opinion, you know, I usually don't say black, I say African.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my mother is part Kalinago and black, and I also acknowledge that, but I'm not going to deny that I'm African, and I'm also not going to deny that I also have Kalinago ancestry, you understand?
Yeah.
But course, generally speaking, we can see. So if a basket has 10 apples, 10 apples, and 8 of those apples are red and 2 of those apples are green, you know, it wouldn't be intelligent to go around saying, I'm a basket of green apples.
Yeah.
When you mostly red apple, you, when it's mostly red apples in the basket, you understand?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. I got some more texts here for you. This text, morning, Aaron, you got to get Chris and Chris Davis and Chris Curry to come on once every month to give a less known section of our history, African, Bahamian, Caribbean, etc. history. Right. Most people know about Haile Selassie, but Emperor Menelik II was much greater. The Asante story is absolutely powerful and makes us proud. Let me read through all of them and I let you respond. Another text says, from the pizza point, very important, gloves need frequent changing. Black people, and then goes on to say, black people have white people in the family tree, great-grandparents most likely white. Another text says, this race ancestry thing is confusing. I am African. What ancestry have to do with that? It has everything to do with that text. I mean, that is it. It is everything. You are African. That is your ancestry. Yeah. No matter, and he says, no matter how many white people in my ancestry, I'm African. Right? Yes. I mean, but African is a definite part of your ancestry and it cannot be removed. European, like me, European is obviously a definite part of my ancestry and cannot be removed. I rather talk about being of mixed European and African and maybe more ancestry than I would do talking about being a mixed race, black and white. Because mixed race, black and white is a political identity because race is a social construct.
Yes.
But their text, that is your ancestry.
It is very complex. You know, it's not something that's simply put, especially given our history and all of the things, you know, race, these racist racial theories were taught in universities as scientific proof. And if when people like W.B. Du Bois and the likes, Marcus Garvey, in the 1910s and 20s and 30s, when these people were speaking about blacks being equal, it was not just the KKK who was saying that. You had professors from Harvard, professors from Yale, all of these highfalutin people in their ivory tower coming down from their ivory tower to say, hey, no, science has already proven that blacks are inferior. Yeah. This is how entrenched this notion of race is.
I get
one of the problems with the studies, which is actually laughable, there was a point during the era of social Darwinism when they thought that the size of your brain in proportion to your body signified intelligence.
Wow.
But when they found out that the San people and the Khoi people of Southern Africa had the biggest brain size in proportion to their body, of course, they threw that theory out the door. That.
But look here, I got another one here for you for us to respond to quickly. Texas says, A.D. Hannah married a white European woman. Are there black Europeans? So I want to say this. I want to say from the stories I heard about Mr. Hannah's wife, right? If this is the woman I know, who went to the Southern Islands and tell the people the Queen sent her there to tell them to vote for the PLP, she may have been identified as white, but I don't think she is a woman that identified herself as white. She may have identified as European descent. She may not have fought or made a challenge if people call her white, but I don't think she identified as white. And in the same way, of course there are black Europeans.
Yeah.
In fact, that's what I can tell my audience to do before we go. When you get an opportunity, go Google Cheddar Man. Cheddar Man. Gloucester. Go look at this blue-eyed, brown-skinned boy, darker than me, who was one of the first remains, one of the first fossils of man they found, or one of the oldest in England.
All people in the world, based on our modern definition, all people in the world at one point were African. All of the people that first settled these places, except for when you're talking about the Americas, because by that point, you know, a lot of evolution already began starting. And people started to lose pigmentation, hair texture, and all of these things started to change, conducive with the environment that they were in. Okay? And this was what social Darwinism did, and they turned that into what they call scientific racism for that time. But this, the discussion about race is extremely important as well. However, we risk a danger of running into something that we call the myth of the white man's burden.
All right, pause right there. You hear that music? Chris, yeah. that music signals we need a part three. I got to read these texts quickly. We got 1 minute to close this out.
Okay.
This text says, hey, Chris, let us not forget Margaret Sanger, the founder of the American Birth Control League and the birth control pill. Another text, Aaron, the first black man in Parliament, the one of Haitian ancestry, was he identified as mulatto or white? I bet you he identified.
That's a great one. I'd actually love to address that.
But listen, we don't have enough time, Chris. I swear, I'm so sorry.
Next show.
Pin
that one. Pin that one for the next show.
I got you. Hold on. I got another person says, as long as the pizza maker washes his hands, gloves aren't necessary. Look here, I will shut your whole business down if I catch you making your pizza, my pizza with no glove. I'm of African descent, but East Indians has suffered more cultural appropriations than any culture.
What?
Okay, first of all, we ain't fighting between East Indians and Africans, but East Indians, we gonna end it right there. You need some mangoes, you get to bring your blood sugar back up. Last text, I love her, Hannah sent, since I wish for unity of white and black. I think this person is saying, I love Beryl Hannah, and she's an epitome of ancestry, people looking beyond race to ancestry to build a common goal. Chris, tell the people how they could find you quickly and where they could find you over the next 3 days. And then I got to shut it out.
Sankofa Flamingo on social media. That's Instagram and Facebook, Sankofa Flamingo. And also check out the World Junkanoo Festival Foundation. The World Junkanoo Festival Foundation, also on Facebook and Instagram.
Okay. And you're going to be on two programs this weekend?
Well, tomorrow will be too early, but I'll put the recording up because it's a show in England, and it's going to be 10 a.m. their time, which is 5 a.m. our time. And then right after that, a few hours later, at 10 a.m. our time, I'm going to be on Junkanoo 242.
Okay, awesome. Awesome. Thank you very much. And when you return, when Christopher Omo Shango Davis returns, we're going to answer the question, was Stephen Dillard the first Haitian Afro descent parliamentarian? Was he identified as white, black, or mulatto?
Oh, that's a great question. I can't wait to get into that one.
Absolutely. Thank you for tuning into the show today, On the Clock with Aaron Green. Stay tuned to 96.9 FM because Levon Millen Unleashed is up next. And thank you to my producer for not cutting me off at 10:59. You guys have a wonderful day and pray for rain and pray we could bring Chris Davis back on as soon as possible. Have a great day, Bahamas. Have a wonderful weekend. And just before I go to the authorities, just remember, if we're trying to end this pandemic, then we've got to test and provide services to everybody in the country, regardless of status. That includes my migrant friends, documented and undocumented. And on that note, have a great day, Bahamas.